Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I don't know what verse. Any idea? 14? 17? Okay, sure. 17. Tatra, tatra, vinikshipta. Nana shilpo pashobitam. Mahabharatastalya. Dushtam vidruma vedibhi. Tatva tatva vinikshipta. Nana shilpo pashobitam. Mahabharakata stolya. Jushtam vidruma vedibhi. Tatra, tatra, here and there, vinikshipta, placed, nana, various, shilpa, by artistic engravings, upashobitam, extraordinarily beautiful. Mahamarakata, of great emeralds. Stalya, with a floor. Jushtam, furnished. Vidruma, of coral. Vedibhi, with raised platforms, dioceses. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Its beauty was enhanced by artistic engravings here and there on the walls. The floor was of emerald with coral dioceses. Purport. At the present moment, people are very proud of their architectural art. Yet floors are generally decorated with colored cement. It appears, however, that the castle constructed by the yogic powers of Kardama Muni had floors of emerald with coral dioceses. This is practically beyond even the imagination of the people of the modern world. How opulent even the houses were, or are, the houses of the yogis. Yogis have controlled their minds and senses, and therefore they are developing great power to control and create. Originally, all this power belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Abhigyaswarat, he can do anything and he knows everything. Omnipotent and omniscient. This we have to try to remember, be aware of. We're hearing about Krishna. We're practicing the devotional service of Krishna. We should bear in mind that Krishna is God. That he knows everything. And he can do whatever he wants without any limit. He has whatever power, whatever he wants to do, that power to do that is automatically at his disposal. That we cannot imagine in our material consciousness, that anybody can be totally unrestricted. in his knowledge and in his activities, that he knows everything and can do anything. We don't have such a person in our experience. Not ourselves or anyone else we know or anyone else we've ever read about in history or even in fiction. Such a person we don't know. But that is God. In general, that's what God is supposed to be, omniscient, omnipotent. These are Latin terms borrowed from Christian theology. So the Christians also think that God knows everything and can do everything, but in such a way that we've depersonalized him. He's been depersonalized. He has all power and all knowledge, but he cannot exercise them. If he starts to act like a person, oh no, you're not God anymore. God can't do anything. God can't have a face, a name. So what's the use of God being all-powerful and all-knowing if we don't let him be a person? Therefore, it's rare, because most people who have a concept of God want to keep God impersonal. If God is all-knowing, an all-powerful person, then I'm just very small in comparison to God, and I have to submit. An impersonal supreme, I can theoretically acknowledge, but it doesn't mean I have to become humble or submissive to anything impersonal, an impersonal supreme. But when the supreme becomes a person, then I have to become serious. And most people, even most people with a religious sentiment, don't want to do that. They don't want to actually give up their pride, their small domain of control. They don't want to become secondary. They want to be primary. But because of that, because of our foolish insistence on being independent of that supreme person, or even refusing to acknowledge his existence, our lives become and remain very restricted. We become very small in the scope of our knowledge and our scope of our capacity to act. We can only do the few things that the stringent laws of material nature allow us to do. I may want knowledge. I have to go to school and work hard to get that knowledge. A student in Sanskrit is called vidyarthi. Somebody who's anxious for knowledge and who's struggling to get it. It's hard work. And what to speak of getting power and the money and other assets that are the means by which we exercise power. To get that money, to get that power and influence, I have to work. I have to sometimes commit all sorts of crimes against others, murder and cheat, in order to get that money and power. It's not easy. And what power I can get, what knowledge I can get, even with all the struggle, is still very restricted and limited. Even the greatest demon, everything he does is under strict restrictions. Like prisoners in the jail, their movements are severely restricted. They're locked up for some hours in their cells. And even when they're let out of the cells, they can march to the dining hall and sit down and eat and go back to their cells and go to exercise for 1 hour. They're not free to just go anywhere and do anything they want. All the prisoners, even the most trusted prisoners, no matter what position you're in the hierarchy of prisoners, you're still locked up. So like that in the material world, no matter how exalted you are, no matter what kind of sage or demigod you may be, you're still living under the strict rules of material nature. You're not free. And we think that that's normal life, to be living under restrictions, to not be free to do what we want, and to be ignorant of most everything and only know a few things. We think that's normal, healthy life. It's totally abnormal and unwholesome, unhealthy to live material life. There's nothing natural about material life at all. So God is never subject to such restrictions. That, by definition of God, comes automatically. But what's even much more amazing is that even finite living entities can also become in effect omniscient and omnipotent by being surrendered devotees of the Supreme. In Vaikuntha, the residents, all of them, although they're finite living entities, can do whatever they want. And they know everything they want to know. They're free. There's no restriction on them. The only restriction is the obligation they feel to satisfy the Supreme Lord. And that's just an obligation, the urge of their natural love. There's no external restriction placed upon them. We cannot imagine that we can live in a place where we're totally free to do whatever we want and we know everything. Now, of course, living entity never becomes God. So there are some distinctions. The Vedanta Sutra specifies, Jagad Vyaparavarjam. As powerful as a liberated living entity may become, he cannot become Lord of the whole universe the way God is. Even one small universe. You can't be God of a whole universe. You can't create a whole universe. Maybe a few planets. And maybe you can become Lord Brahma, deputy God. But to be the independent Lord of the entire universe, that you cannot do. No jiva is allowed to do that. And you cannot know everything in the same way that God knows all the details of everything. The omniscience of a finite living being is simply that he knows everything he needs to know or wants to know. Whatever information he needs will be provided to him by the Supreme Lord, by the Supersoul. It's like having an internet connection to the Supersoul. You may not have in your brain all the information, but you can get online and receive whatever information you need by connection, by the internet connection with the Supreme, with the Supersoul. That's the omniscience of a living entity, of a finite jiva. Krishna will tell him whatever the jiva needs to know. But never is it the situation that the jiva becomes as omniscient, as all-knowing, literally, as God is, or as all-powerful as God is. But still, no restrictions. You can know whatever you want to know, and anything you want to do, Krishna will give you the special power to do it. That's the liberated state. Only out of foolishness and ignorance do we prefer to remain in the material condition and ignore the opportunity, even consciously refuse the opportunity to gain liberation. Tamasi ma jyotir gamayo. Why remain in the darkness? Go to the light. The Vedas are telling us that, but often we don't hear it. And even if we hear it through our ears, we don't really believe it. And therefore, we are satisfied to remain in the material world. Even many who are doing some sort of worship of the Lord, they're practicing mixed devotion. Jnana Mishra Bhakti, Karma Mishra Bhakti, especially Karma Mishra Bhakti. Persons who have a feeling that they should serve God, and they have some knowledge, theoretical knowledge about God. And they've practicing all sorts of rituals for the worship of God. But they're still interested to remain in the material world and enjoy. They don't really want liberation. Not yet. Maybe later on, but I don't want it now. I have business and I'm enjoying here now. That's Karma Mishra Bhakti. And then those who are more intelligent than that, and they want liberation. Primarily their desire is liberation, deliverance from the cycle of birth and death. The Gyanis, that's their goal.
Gyanis are those who are interested in mukti, the mumukshus, those who desire liberation.
And they practice devotional service as a means to get their primary goal of liberation. The worship of the Lord for them is just the upaya, the means. The goal is liberation. That is Jnana Mishra Bhakti, devotion mixed with impersonal knowledge, knowledge aimed at liberation. These are both deficient. Jnana Mishra Bhakti, Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. The Supreme Lord's own program is Shuddha Bhakti. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has appeared in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what he is teaching is Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhaktir hoi tuki tvai. Taking the role of the devotee, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling us how to think. We shouldn't want material things. We shouldn't want followers. We shouldn't want wealth. We shouldn't want poetic inspiration. None of these. They're all material attachments that will baffle our attempt to achieve spiritual success. But liberation also is not a preferable goal. We shouldn't be interested just in attaining liberation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in these words, Mama janmani janmani ishvare bhavatad bhaktir hoi tuki tvai. In my birth after birth, please let me have pure devotional service for you. So he says in my birth after birth, he does not care even for liberation. Let me take birth again and again. But I must have the opportunity to practice serving you in unalloyed, pure devotional service, unmixed by karma and jnana. That Lord Chaitanya demands. That is the program of Lord Chaitanya. Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotion, with the aim not of remaining in this material world and at the same time serving God, and not the aim of getting impersonal liberation, or even going back to Vaikuntha. The aim is to develop love of Krishna, even if we have to stay on this earth or go to hell, lifetime after lifetime. As long as we get the opportunity to associate with pure devotees and engage in the practice of pure devotional service, then we're satisfied. Even the perfection of getting entrance into Vaikuntha, that is not the goal. That could be accepted for service, but it is not the purpose of our service. That is the program recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to have those aims. Jai Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. Devotional service is a method, a process, a program. So when designing a program, recommending to people that for self-improvement, you should follow this program. Just like some doctor is giving a program for losing weight or for finding out how to give up smoking. Program for giving up smoking or for losing weight. So the goal is established and the doctor prescribes a particular method that will work. But first you have to decide what your goal is. What are you trying to accomplish? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has defined the goal for us. And then we can work out the details of what the methodology can be to accomplish that goal. The goal is Krishna Prema. Prema Pumarto Mahan. There are four traditionally recognized goals of human endeavor. Artha, Kama, Moksha, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Usually Dharma is listed first. First you have to be religious. We say religious, but the word religion means something not exactly what we want to say.
Religion means belief. But we're talking about dharma. Doing the right thing, doing what's proper, and thinking what's proper. This is dharma. Fulfilling the responsibility of your human life. That is your human dharma. Practicing the service of God. That is the proper dharma of the soul. The proper function. So when we first of all practice dharma and act right, think right, then that is one goal of life. To rectify our behavior and thought and become dharmic. Just become civilized. But by that we accomplish artha, kama, and maybe moksha. We get material assets, especially money, economic development. And with money and other assets, we can enjoy kama, sense gratification. These are intermediate goals. Artha and kama are goals for materialists. And spiritualists may accept them as intermediate steps. You have to have some wealth. Otherwise you cannot live peacefully. You cannot live health. Your body and mind cannot be healthy. Daridriya dosho gunarashi nashi. The fault of poverty destroys heaps of pious credits. If you're too poor, then you cannot prosecute spiritual life nicely. If you're too destitute. So you should have some wealth. Enough to keep body and soul together comfortably. And you need some sense gratification. Not yet, Krishna says, Natya nashnastu yogosti, nai chaikantama nashnataha. Someone cannot be a yogi if he eats too much. But also if he tries to fast completely, his mind will become agitated, his body will become weak, and he will not be able to properly practice the yoga system. Nati na swapt chati swapna shilasya na naiva jagrato naiva charjuna. And one cannot be a proper yogi if he sleeps too much, then he'll be in the mode of ignorance, or if he sleeps too little, he'll be disturbed and weak. If he stays awake and doesn't sleep at all, jagrata. So moderation is needed in sense gratification also. Not no sense gratification, but moderate amount of allowed sense gratification. Devotees take Krishna prasadam. That is their basic sense gratification. The nice food that's been offered to Krishna. We can enjoy it. We can enjoy it not just some meager, restricted amount. We can enjoy nicely. We're not restricted. Prabhupada didn't really say that you can only have two chapatis. Some early temple presidents in America may have gotten that idea. That Prabhupada thought we should only have two or three chapatis a day. We can have as many chapatis as we need. But we should not overdo it. We should be moderate. So, even for the spiritualists, artha and kama have their place. They have to be considered. But they're only intermediate goals. They're not the final purpose of life. If you make the purpose of your life to eat, to get money, then you're a materialistic fool. And then the fourth goal, liberation, is also important. A neophyte devotee, a beginner in devotional service, should not pretend prematurely, artificially, that he's not interested in liberation. If you're suffering in material life, you should want to get free from that suffering. How can you enjoy Krishna consciousness? How can you be successful in Krishna consciousness if you're miserable? So you need liberation from that misery. The other idea of liberation from the cycle of birth and death, that we don't really need. But we should, in the beginning, we can think that we need it. It's a motivation. I want to be serious. I want to become serious about serving Krishna and the Vaishnavas so that I can get out of this world. That's a good motivation for a beginner. Later on, we give that up. Later on, we should give that up. But those four goals are not the program of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He proposes a fifth goal of life. that is far superior to all four of the other ones that everyone else recognizes. Prema Pumarto Mohan, the highest goal of life, the ultimate goal of life, is love for Krishna. And that's accomplished by practicing Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service, as taught by Srila Rupa Goswami, and as presented to us in ISKCON by Srila Prabhupada. The program of practicing how to learn how to love Krishna. That's the purpose, and that's what can be gained by it, what can be accomplished by it. Hare Krishna. Okay, so are there any questions or comments? Hare Krishna.
Why so long time our announcers doesn't, they don't go out, they disturb us?
Because our anarthas are a chronic disease. We've been infected by them for many lifetimes. And they've sunk very deep roots into our heart. Those bad habits that we've been practicing for many lifetimes are not easy to give up. Param drishto nivartate. We can give them up when we get a higher taste. But it's a cycle. Until we give up, we can't really get the higher taste. And until we get the higher taste, we can't really give up. So we have to do it bit by bit. Surrender a little bit, give up our attachments a little bit, then we get a little bit more taste, then we can surrender a little bit more, and it can go on like that for decades. But anyway, the main reason why it takes a long time is that we have very deep conditioning, bad habits that go back for many years and even lifetimes. And some of them are very bad habits, very addictive. Okay.
How could speed up this process?
We should understand the importance of taking shelter at Krishna's feet. We should be convinced of the success we can accomplish by doing that. And we should be very honest, not just to other people, but especially to ourselves. We should be able to look in the mirror and recognize our own faults. You know, if we, just like a man, if he's sick, his wife is telling him to go to the doctor, but he doesn't want to go. He doesn't recognize, he doesn't want to admit that he's sick. Then the doctor, what can he do? The man won't even come to him. So the first thing required to become cured of a disease is to recognize you're sick. Admit it. We have to be able to look in the mirror and admit our faults. Then we can correct them. But when we ignore the faults and pretend that they're not there, then it takes a long time to correct. Then Krishna just has to trick us. We don't admit our faults. Krishna has to trick us by various means to give them up. But if we consciously and humbly and honestly admit, at least to Krishna, maybe not to the whole world, we don't have to make a public spectacle, but we admit to ourselves and to Krishna that these are my faults. These are the anarthas I have to give up. We have to be honest with ourselves and ready to look at our faults. Then we can get a good start and make quick progress in getting free from them. We have to stop trying to advertise how to the world how great we are and honestly look inside and see what the problems are, what the faults are. Okay. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Oh, yes. Thank you.
If we saw a dominator, it is good that we ask for Sudanam.
If we're contaminated, is it good that we should ask for Shutanam?
Shutanam is we ask for the champions, for the name.
If we can chant, if we can get Shutanama, if you can find someone who can give it to you, if you can find it at any price, take it. Because if you chant Krishna's name purely, even once, all your contamination will be dissolved completely. You know, you may want to demolish an old building. If you drop an atomic bomb on it, don't worry, it'll be demolished. So like that, if you chant Krishna's name purely once, don't worry that your contamination won't be dissolved. It's like dropping an atomic bomb. But the problem is that we usually don't want Shuddhanama. We're satisfied with a cheap imitation of it. We're moving our tongue, we're mumbling something, but we're not really trying to chant purely. We don't want to stop committing aparads against Vaishnavas. I'm chanting, and while I'm chanting my japa, I'm thinking bad thoughts about Vaishnavas. I'm committing aparad while I'm chanting. Vaishnava aparad, nama aparad. So that offensive chanting must be practiced for a long time before we can become purified. Once chanting purely will get rid of all contamination. But chanting offensively can if the result of that may take many lifetimes. We can honestly assume that our chanting is still offensive now. We have to try to give up those offenses so our chanting becomes effective. There's the intermediate stage of namabhas, where offenses are not being committed, but we haven't developed love yet. That namabhas will give immediate liberation. Even chanting Krishna's namabhas name once will give liberation. That means anarta nivritti. If we even get to the second stage of the reflection, dim shadow of Krishna's name, that will immediately give us liberation. That's all. We have to give up anartas. Well, okay, you're asking how to get rid of contamination. I say you have to get rid of contamination. Again, it's a cycle. If you can chant without offenses, then all contamination is gone. But if you have contamination, you're going to commit offenses. So we have to gradually go around in a circle, give up a little bit of offense, and then get purified by that. And because it becomes a little more purified, give up another offense, like that. It's a cycle that goes around in a circle, and gradually we become purified. Gradually we approach the pure holy name. There's nothing wrong with wanting it. If you can get it, if you can find it, if you can chant Krishna's name purely within 5 minutes, by some means, do it. That will make your life perfect. And if you can't do it, if you find it takes a long time to get anywhere near the holy name, pure holy name, then take as much time as it takes. Even if it takes 100 lifetimes, it's worth it. Okay? We have to be patient also. It may take time.
Okay.
Chant helplessly. Prabhupada says chant like a child calling for his mother. The child doesn't think he has any other shelter but the mother. So we should
be convinced that we have no other shelter but Krishna's name, and helplessly beg for protection, then we can get. That will speed up the process, to chant with that attitude. Otherwise, we had to practice and practice and practice for a long time. Normally, we have to practice for decades. Even great, famous devotees, they practiced chanting for many, many years. Then Krishna empowered them. So if the great devotees practice for many years, why do we expect we can do it for just a few weeks? Okay. Anyway, chanting Hare Krishna is not such a horrible thing. We can tolerate doing it for a few years. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you. All glory, Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.